Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. The past few seasons, we've talked a lot about the narrative and cultural war that is happening and where we're at. And today, I have the great pleasure of interviewing an American who's had his sleeves rolled up for 40 years or more. He has written a book recently that talks about the narrative and cultural war, and it is full of truthful and steely-eyed descriptions of the challenges that Americans face right now. But it is also a strategic and tactical book full of practical advice for conservative Americans, and he is incredibly optimistic. And you know that I gravitate towards American optimism. I believe that keeping the faith and staying optimistic, along with our can-do attitude and work ethic, are our superpowers. And I believe that America has a divine assignment, a God-chosen nation that is the greatest hope humanity has against the globalist, authoritarian, and Marxist adversaries that work to demean, demoralize, and diminish our numbers. Today's interview is a good one. My guest and I range from the formation of the Uniparty to looking how the Marxist influence in education has been an absolute disaster for our kids and their ability to think critically. We also touch on the legalization of marijuana and how did COVID really come about. And we are not talking conspiracy theories, Base Campers, straight up facts. We also talk about why getting involved locally is really the best way to make a difference. Let's get to it, Base Campers. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Floyd Brown. Floyd has long been an influential conservative, even working as part of Ronald Reagan's team. He is an author many times over, a keynote speaker, and the founder of the Western Journal. He's also a former radio host right here in Seattle and has appeared on many TV shows, including 2020, The Bill Maher Show, Fox News, CNN, Good Morning America, and many others. He's also a devout follower of Jesus. Here is my interview with Floyd Brown. All right. I am here with Floyd Brown, author and patriot, keynote speaker, founder of Western Journal, Floyd Brown. Floyd, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
It's great to be with you, Tony, and I'm excited for our conversation.
Yeah, me too. You know, we've been, I had tech problems before and we had to reschedule and you were gracious enough to say yes again. Your book Counterpunch, I love Counterpunch. You know what I love about it? It's really well written, but also it's optimistic. It tells the truth about the situation that we're facing right now in our country, but it's also tactical and strategic. And so great job on that. We're going to get into all of that. But before we really get started, I guess I wanted, for those that don't know you, you're a very well-known figure, but just give us a little bit of a background, kind of where you grew up. And just in a few minutes, kind of, I know it's hard. You've got a long resume. Just tell us maybe a little bit of the highlights and then where you live now.
I will do that, Tony. First and foremost, I was born at Harrison Memorial Hospital in Bremerton, Washington. Mm-hmm. So I am no stranger to the Pacific Northwest. My father was in the sawmill business, so we moved all over the Northwest. We lived out in Grace Harbor County for a while. I ended up actually graduating from Olympia High School. We lived in Port Orchard for a while, so that was my childhood growing up in the Pacific Northwest. I went to the University of Washington, where I met my wife, who's a graduate of Ingram High School up in North Seattle, and we've been married for 42 years now, and I've had, you know, just an amazing career. I spent 13 years in Washington, D.C., working for President Reagan. Then I worked for Senator Bob Dole. I founded an organization called Citizens United. Then I came back out to Seattle and was a host on KVI radio for about half a decade. Then I headed off to California to run the Reagan Ranch in Santa Barbara, did that for another half decade, really enjoyed that posting, doing the original preservation of the Reagan Ranch, somebody who's been very important in my life, Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in 2008, I founded Western Journal and ran that until actually this last year. My son took over. He's editor in chief and publisher now. And I'm spending my time writing, doing podcasts, and just trying to follow the pathway that the Lord has laid out before me.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, we have some things in common. I grew up in a timber town up here in Longview. And then I live right by Ingram High School, where your wife went to school. And my wife went to UW. I went to WSU. So, yeah, you have deep ties in the Pacific Northwest. So,
well, in fact, our ties are even deeper. My family first came to what's now the state of Washington when it was a territory. They moved to Anacortes in 1885. So both my wife and I have a lot of extended family in the Pacific Northwest.
And you live in Phoenix now, or the Phoenix area?
Yes. When I founded Western Journal, it's based in Phoenix, and we've been in Phoenix since really 2010.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. So let's see, the Counterpunch, the book. So I'm reading a little bit, and then I've got a question for you. So you said the name of the book's Counterpunch, An Unlikely Alliance of Americans Fighting Back for Faith and Freedom. I really love this book. And on the back, you say it's been happening issue by issue with complicity of both parties. The fundamental ideals of the nation, including our faith and freedom, are being crushed for the benefit of powerful elites. Using everything from big tech to big government, these power brokers are silencing the voices of dissent, canceling those who refuse to fall in line, and pitting the masses against one another. This is a very apt description of what's going on. In the book, you have a chapter titled, What If They Formed a Uniparty and Didn't Announce It? And Floyd, one of the things that I see up in Washington is a lot of people don't distinguish this at all. In other words, they're still stuck in the old, both parties are all corrupt, or Republicans are good, Democrats are bad. And everybody that says they're a Republican is a good Republican, is a true conservative. But my wife has been intimately involved up here in politics. And what we've seen, and it's an extension, I think, of what you see in other states, but it's pretty prominent here, is the Uniparty is really the Democrat Party, which represents the globalist interests. And they have co-opted plenty of Republicans to play along with their game. And so that leaves a handful, a small percentage. I don't know what the percentage is, but there's a small band of intrepid true conservatives that love this country, are aware that it's a constitutional republic, and are just like, they're well-informed and they're fighting. Many of them do love President Trump, but not all of them. I don't want to speak for everybody. They see him as a fighter for America, but people are a little bit still stuck in the old Democrat versus Republicans, Republicans all good, Democrats all bad, or, they don't distinguish that there is something happening in the Republican Party worth noting. And I've said it on my show plenty of times, and I'll get your comments, that up here, and you probably know this quite well, the Uniparty that we're calling out, it's really funded by the same people. It's the same. It's Gates. It's the Gates Foundation and all the offshoots that fund it. And so you can have a Republican that talks almost exactly like a Democrat in what they care about up here. And so you don't get the distinction. And so I wanted to ask you about that, because you wrote about it in the chapter. I think it's happening a lot of places, but I don't know if you're seeing it in Arizona, but we really see it up here in Washington.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon that is seen across the country, Tony. Mm-hmm. And first of all, you have to understand the type of people that are drawn to politics. The people that naturally are drawn to politics are ambitious people. They have kind of a underlying lust to run other people's lives. And so they want power. They desire power. you know, a lot of times they want it for good. They want to, you know, fix things or make things better for their community. But underlying, they're really ambitious people. And so when you're in an area that is more Republican, which, you know, in Washington state, that would be mostly east of the mountains these days. It used to be when I was first in politics, you know, counties like Snohomish and even, you know, Southern King County were very Republican. The in Pierce County was Republican. But in those types of areas where Republicans often win, people that are ambitious become Republicans. It's not really about what they believe. It's about what they think can get them elected. And so that's why you get this whole uniparty. And so you get basically people that you know, want to grow the size and scope of government that become Republican because they think they can get elected in a Republican area. And so that's what causes this uniparty. Yeah. And you see, the founders knew, and the founders said that, first of all, for America to be successful, it had to be a knowledgeable, well-educated, and moral society. And as the foundations of the nation's education system have been, you know, basically blasted with dynamite, where we now have a system that trains to compliance as opposed to training people to think for themselves.
Yeah.
And you have also with that, the aftermath of the sexual revolution, which washed over the country in the late 60s, early 70s, and really on into our present time, you saw a massive erosion in the cohesion of the family. There's actually a list of 84 different markers, everything from divorce to families without fathers, children without parents, drug use, alcoholism. There's like 84 markers. All of those markers have deteriorated in America. And it tracks with when the Supreme Court threw prayer out of the public schools, when the Supreme Court said, you know, there was this fictitious separation of church and state and people that were Christian shouldn't be involved in politics. When that happened in the early 1960s, all of those pathologies have mushroomed. And I think we've really learned, and I talk about this in the book, you know, when you legalize marijuana, it doesn't make the marijuana problem better. That's what they promised us. Remember, they said, oh,
yeah.
Well, the first step was, oh, you know, people have cancer and they need it for pain management. So we said, okay, yeah, we'll let them have it for pain management. But then they said, well, we really need it for recreational purposes because, you know, it's not just pain management. If you make it legal for recreational purposes, the problem will get better. Well, I actually stayed about a week and a half ago in downtown Seattle at the Westin Hotel. And, you know, which is a very storied old hotel that's been kind of a landmark in Seattle.
Sure,
two Westin Towers there. Mm-hmm. I actually honeymooned with my wife in those towers in the 1980s, in 1983. And so we decided we were going to stay down there. And so we were downtown and they were trying to clean it up for the World Cup for FIFA. But still, the absolute stench of marijuana was just overwhelming. I thought I was at a Grateful Dead concert walking around downtown Seattle. And it never used to be like that. I mean, as somebody who has visited Seattle my entire childhood and adult life, the city has just changed. And every time they do something, oh, we're going to legalize marijuana, that will make it better. or we're going to hand out needles that will make it better. It makes it absolutely worse.
Yep. Yep. I agree. It's embarrassing. I mean, how bad it smells with cannabis in Seattle. You're right. It does smell like a dead concert. It's, you know, yeah. And they sold it to us like, hey, we're kind of libertarian, like live and let live. But it is, you don't see the impact of it on the culture and the city until it's been rolled out for a while. And then you're like, oh, this isn't good at all. Like, you know, when you were talking, I just had a thought too, before I get to the next question, is that you were talking about government and that it attracts ambitious people. With all of the corruption and graft that has been revealed by DOGE, how much theft of taxpayer dollars, it's also attracting a criminal mindset. More sociopaths are entering into it. So it's not just ambitious people. It's people that are like, oh man, I can get really rich if I can get in this system, right? Because there's just so much money laundering and fake NGOs that get all this taxpayer dollars, and it's happening, you know, nationwide and in other states. But, you know, you wrote in the book that COVID was the deep state's darkest victory. And I have a piece from Naomi Wolf, but I just wanted to ask you what you meant by that, because I know COVID was different state to state. I feel like I saw some of the worst of it in Washington because we were just locked down. Everybody was wearing a mask. Everybody was yelling at anybody that wasn't wearing a mask, even if it was outside. Like, it was absolutely insane.
It was beyond insane. I had a friend of mine who has a home on Lake Chelan who said that they wouldn't let a single person go out in the lake to fish alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they were going to catch COVID alone out on a boat in the middle of the lake.
Yeah, I know. It was insane.
It was insane, but it was insane nationwide. And first of all, we have to understand where this came from. We now know, as a result of everything that's come out, as a result of the DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, releasing so many documents, that we were running something like 130 biolabs all over the world, all over the globe, because it was illegal in the United States to do gain of function research, which means it was against the law for a scientist to go into his laboratory and try and make a pathogen more dangerous. Mm-hmm. That was against the law. So what did the government do? We funded it around the globe.
Yeah.
And it ended up getting out of the Wuhan lab, which we were funding, which was clearly doing gain of function research. And we got this. It wasn't really a virus. It was a bioweapon, Tony.
Yep.
And it was engineered to kill people. Mm-hmm. You know, very, very dark days. And then, of course, in order to maximize the profits from it, they didn't want people to get natural immunity. Mm-hmm. So the reason they locked everybody down was so that natural immunity couldn't grow and defeat the virus, which is the way most viruses end up getting defeated. They wanted everybody to be susceptible so that they could get the maximum uptake of their very, very profitable vaccine.
Absolutely. You know, one thing, I'm going to read you something by Naomi Wolf that relates to this. So she says, quote, meanwhile, back in the city, she's talking about COVID. Meanwhile, back in the cities, a dark, poisonous miasma had settled into every corner. The scores of people frightened into believing, truly believing, that their neighbors were trying to kill them with each sniffle and cough. Highly educated people began repeating only the talking points from MSNBC or CNN, refusing to hear otherwise. Wolf's lifelong friends literally told her, I don't want to see that. Don't show me, when she would show them anything that we're talking about, right? Proof that there was something else going on. It wasn't just what the CNN and MSNBC were telling them to think about it, and they didn't want to hear it. Right. That was part of the problem. I felt like I bumped into the same thing. I was like trumpeting, like, be careful with the vaccine, like, watch out. Like, there's all this going on. And people are like, oh, my God, cancel that guy. he is, you know, he's over the target apparently is what it was. But you know what I mean? Like I got in the crosshairs with all kinds of stuff. I got kicked off of Twitter for saying stuff. And now I realize, well, I was speaking, God was having me speak the truth about it. And hopefully some people, it made an impact in the choices they made. But it was, I just could not believe how many people up here were blindly complying with authorities that were corrupted. The World Health Organization, Fauci, God, Fauci, how has he not been arrested already? You know, all well, these
he, people, was, yeah. He was pardoned by Joe Biden.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why he hasn't been arrested. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows he's a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. he's the one who funded gain of function around the globe when it was illegal.
Yeah. Yep. I know. Well, you had said something about mass delusional psychosis. And I have heard Elon Musk describe this, the woke ideology, as a mind virus that had afflicted his son, who's transgender. I don't remember if it's a son or a daughter. It's one or the other, but he's got a transgender child. And like, why is the left so susceptible to this? Where what I just talked about, what Naomi Wolf said, where they can't actually go, let me set aside everything that I think about this for a second. Let me just play with some critical thinking here. Because Floyd might be right about this. Let me just entertain that. There is no opening for anything on there. It just seems shut down, and that you and I are the enemies. And maybe that's the way God intended, and just deal with it. That's the way that goes, you know. But I still sometimes marvel at how stuck they are in that conditioning, where, you know, there's no such thing as a man. You know, it's okay to have boys in girls sports. I'm like, are you insane? Can you hear yourself talk?
So this has to do with the simple, simple fact that the Marxists have been running our education system really since the mid 1930s. And it's only gotten worse. And they progressively, it's one of the reasons they're called progressives, change the education system. The American education system was traditionally built on the Western values of freedom of thought and freedom of expression and the whole idea of rhetoric and debate. That's the fine Western tradition. But now the schools are really focused on dispensing information that you must memorize because you have to agree with the state, and they've become really indoctrination centers that teach young people not to think, but actually to do the counter, to just obey. And an entire generation has been raised in these schools. And so it's not surprising that they obey, because that's what they've been taught. They've been taught, trust the expert, trust the technocrat, trust the bureaucrat, trust the person that knows more. And they didn't learn anything in school, so they know very little. Yeah. So they in essence, trust that elite. And it's a system, it's an oligarchy, actually, is what it is. It's an oligarchy of elites that control everyone. And that's what they want. They want us to obey as opposed to think for ourselves. But America was built by people that think for themselves. That is why we've been so successful.
That's right. You know, I saw a big difference in just a generation, or a generation and a half, when I went to public school in Longview, and I had to do book reports on Hemingway and, To Kill a Mockingbird. And, you know, like just there was a list, and you had to do book reports, and you had to write, and you had to read the book. So I sent my son to a faith-based school up in Seattle. So he had book reports. He had to read some of the classics that we read, right? And he had biblical studies and all this different stuff. And he had true civics as well. He learned what America did well and the founders and all that stuff. I talked to a friend of mine whose kid was going to the public school, the one that you had mentioned, Ingram. His son goes there. And I was mentioning literature and what they were reading. And I said, is your son doing book reports? And he goes, well, they only have one book report that they have to do. I go, oh, really? That's kind of light. What books are they choosing? He goes, oh, they can do it on a comic book. And I go, a comic book is his one book report? I go, doesn't that concern you? And he laughed and like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal, you know? And I'm like, whoa. And they're teaching no civics at all. In fact, to your point, they're teaching a Marxist hate America narrative underneath it all. Land acknowledgement, like just everything, the worst of the worst of all the Marxist stuff is in the public schools. So my question to you, Floyd, when Trump stepped in for the second term, there was some memes and some murmurings that he was going to dismantle the Department of Education, which I think is a great idea. Like, it is doing nothing but harm. All the reading and test scores of math, like there's no critical thinking. There's not teaching them anything, to your point, but obedience and compliance to the state. Just pull it apart, get rid of it, start from scratch, start putting some classical education back in, because we've already been hurt on like two generations now have been under the extreme Marxist influence. Now, well, I mean, what do we do other than take it apart? And I know there's probably teachers out there that are like, my job, but if you're a good teacher, you can still teach in any kind of new system. You know, that's not hard to do if you're really for the kids, because I don't think the Department of Education is pro-child or pro-family at all anymore.
No, well, so the Department of Education was started by Jimmy Carter. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was started was it was a payoff to the teachers union, the National Education Association at the time. And we were number one in the world in educational success the year Jimmy Carter created that Department of Education.
Wow.
Now we're 40th in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The only place where we're number one is in the spending per student. We spend more on each student than any other schools around the globe, but we don't have the best outcomes. And so it's become unionized. And so you have a lot of teachers that are marking time, that are collecting pay, and are not really teaching. There are great teachers in the system that try to do well, but they're not rewarded the way they should be if we had a merit-based system where the very best teachers made the most amount of money. So I'm a big proponent of school choice. Where you have school choice, test scores rise, even in the inner city. Every place they've done it, every place that they've allowed there to be competition in education, just like in department stores or in grocery stores or in anything else, wherever they've allowed competition, educational outcomes and test scores have improved.
That is a good solution. You know, you're a big advocate for getting involved locally, and I love this about the book. We're kind of seeing a grassroots movement, small here, amongst good Americans, good Christians in King County. And there's more and more conservatives, I think, that are starting to go, hey, wait a minute. I'm hearing people, there's some men and women stepping up. And maybe I should do my part. Maybe I should get involved, be a PCO. Maybe I should go attend some school board meetings since I care so much about education. Or maybe I should run for city, or, you know, let me help in any way I can. Yet, my sense, and I don't want to speak for Arizona, but in Washington, there's still a lot of really good Christians, really good Americans that care about this country that are still on the sidelines, just kind of listening to podcasts or watch it. You know, we need more involvement. We need more involvement. I know there's people that care, and we need more of the people that care to say, let me do my part. What could that be? Because it's never going to be super convenient. Like when you say, I'm going to take this on, yeah, it takes up some of your time, but it's putting your money where your mouth is, or putting your time where your mouth is. It's saying, look, I have these values and I'm going to make my life part about that. You have been a living example of that for decades and decades. So what is your message to maybe some sleepy or some now awakening conservatives that care about the country that are like, I don't really need to be involved. Let Floyd handle it, or let, you know, let let King County GOP, the 12 people that are just doing everything, let them do it. You know,
So first of all, the reason I'm an advocate for local action is because most of us will never have any impact on what's going on in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
We're not going to decide the outcome of the Iran war. Mm-hmm. We're not going to decide the outcome of negotiations with the G7. But what we can impact is what a local PTA is doing where our kids go to school. Mm-hmm. What we can impact is, you know, if we live in a small town, you take Kent, Washington. I know it's grown a lot in the last few years, but, you know, it used to be a small town. You can get involved in the city government. You can run for office. You can actually have an impact right where you are to make things better. So the way we change America is we literally do it block by block, town by town, county by county. And that's, we have to change people's hearts right where we're at. And if you start organizing at the local level, you will be amazed, because so many people sit on the sideline. If you can activate yourself and a group of your friends, you could probably be running your town in a couple mm-hmm. of years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great message. I love that. It's super inspiring, because I think part of the cynicism and the resignation that I see is people think it doesn't make a difference. But you're saying, wait a minute, let's focus in on these areas that really do make a difference. If you can get involved, talk to your, you know, sphere of influence. I'm seeing that in King County. We just need to keep rippling it. You know what I mean? We've got a good base, but we need to keep expanding it.
So I have a gentleman that I talk about in the book named Basil Firmenos. And Basil he got so upset about COVID, he started texting some friends, you know, hey, we got to change some things here in our little community during COVID. And I don't know, I think he said he texted like 15 friends to meet for coffee, and 200 people showed up. Because people desired change. So, you know, we have so many tools right now. Don't worry about what's going on, you know, far away. You're not going to impact that. But you can impact what's happening on your street.
That's great. That's great. You know, I wanted to ask you, because you got such a great handle on the narrative, the issues. Are you optimistic right now? Is the pendulum starting to swing our way? I am.
I'm very optimistic.
Yeah. Good.
First of all, I have a good friend who is a tent revivalist. Okay. He holds tent meetings, and he, has been in Stockton, California, holding a tent meeting. Last night was his last night. And he had been there for something like 12 days. And when you see the young people that are coming out to learn about Jesus and to learn about the Bible, they're all in their 20s. I mean, that generation has no hope.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you want hope, there's only one place to find it. You're not going to find it on MS Now or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
You're not going to find it on CNN. You're not going to find it at NBC. You're going to find hope in Jesus. Jesus is the only real hope Americans as individuals have. And those of us that live in communities, that's how we fix our communities. There has to be a change in the hearts and the minds and the methodologies. And really the only place you can do that is through the teachings of Christ, in my opinion.
Amen, brother.
But getting back to this tent crusade, literally thousands of people are showing up. Hundreds of people, probably thousands of people, are giving their life to Christ and saying, I want that hope that comes with a dedication of my life to Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yes, I have hope. I see things happening. And it's where things are the darkest. I mean, Stockton is a city like Seattle. It's a city that's so dark. and it's, you know, crime riddled and drug riddled. And it's been, you know, at the forefront of all of these left wing policies, and the whole town has been grifted. And yet that's where people are looking for hope. Sometimes in the darkness, that candle can be really bright.
Amen, brother. Amen. I love it. I love the message. And you're right. It's like Christ is the light. And this generation that's coming up, my son's generation, he's 19, they're exposed to so much stuff that isn't aligned with God. And they're exposed to so much cynicism. You know, I'm never going to be able to buy a house. I'm never going to be able to have a family. All these different things is their narrative. And they have to work through that dark, you know, Luciferian, you know, placed, you know, agenda, frankly.
But Tony, an important thing to understand is that is the message that this generation was given in public schools. It was, we're all dead in 10 years because of climate change.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're all going to die of starvation. Why would you have a kid? Why would you have a family? Mm-hmm. Why would you have relationships? Just grab what you can get right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that message was a message of compliance because they wanted the state to solve climate change, number one. And number two, it's a hopeless message. It's a message of fear. But that's what Satan does. Satan is the messenger of fear, and he wants people living in fear. Just like you were earlier talking about the people that were all masked up, you know, huddling in their bedrooms and wouldn't even talk to their own kids because they were so afraid of COVID. You know, that's being overcome by fear. If the Bible teaches one thing, it teaches fear not, for I am the Lord your God. And so the Bible actually says fear not 365 times, which is one fear not for every day of every year. So the truth is that's one of the most important and significant messages of Scripture is fear not. Don't fear. Instead, trust. Trust God. Trust Jesus. Trust the Holy Spirit. And that's what will revolutionize people and give them peace. We all want peace. This is a country that people just don't have any peace. And, you know, they're also fed this line of you got to have, you got to have a new car, you got to have this, you got to have that. You know, if I had said I'm not going to have any kids until I can afford them, I still wouldn't have any kids. And I'm 65.
Right.
The truth is you can never afford kids. And so we live in an incredibly wealthy society, but we're always told you got to have more. And especially on social media, Instagram, all of these websites, they're teaching this message and creating anxiety. They're creating fear, and people aren't happy, but they can be.
What a great message that rant, that whole piece that you just did was. I don't think we can do any better than that to finish with. You know, you reminded me when I was down, when Charlie Kirk was still alive, I was down in Phoenix for TPUSA. And I remember Benny Johnson, he did a piece and he finished. He said, hey, go out, all you conservative young people, go out, have lots of kids, have more kids than you can afford. Trust God that it's good. You know, and it's like, I thought, what a great message. I would never hear that in Seattle. Right. It's like, it was so embracing, you know, God's plan for us to have families. And it was just such a positive message as you're giving right now as well.
Let me just say one last thing about that. So
sure.
On April 15th, I had my fifth grandson was born. So I've been in a period of like 6 weeks of intense grandparenting with this baby that my daughter had. And it is so enjoyable, so pleasurable. It creates so much happiness in my heart to have this grandchild. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think about is, you know, people from my generation that said, no, I'd rather have a BMW than have kids.
Yeah.
They'll never experience that grandchild.
Yep.
And that's given me more joy than any possession I've ever had.
Yeah. Beautiful. That's so beautiful. You know, are you doing anything for the 250th July 4th? You got plans for that?
I actually do. I'm having a a party at my house. I've got all of my neighbors and relatives. Oh. And yeah, we're going to have a I don't want to call it a blowout, but we're going to be celebrating. I mean, we've got a lot to celebrate. You know, if there's anything I'm grateful for, if there's anything I'm grateful to God for, it's being born in the United States of America, because despite our issues, everybody wants to come here because this is the best place on earth. And the reason it's the best place on earth is because our founders founded a nation based on the principles that were in the Bible. They understood human nature, and that understanding of human nature helped them build a government system that has given us unbelievable prosperity, liberty, and happiness.
Yeah, that is awesome. Floyd, where can people find you? Where can people find the book? And anything else you'd like to mention to the listeners as we get this horse in the barn?
Well, the best place to find me is to on Twitter. I'm at Floyd Brown. So if you know my name, you can find me on Twitter. And also on the pages of westernjournal.com. I write there a lot. You'll find a lot of great information and news every day there. We do our best to, you know, break out of the narratives and give people the truth. So those are the places you'll find me. I also, you know, keep pretty busy speaking around the country. So I tend to post those on my website, which is just floydbrown.com. I'm not that hard to find. And Counterpunch, I poured everything I'd learned in 50 years of political activism into Counterpunch. And I really felt that the Holy Spirit wanted me to write that book. And so I did my best every time I sat down to write to pray, "Dear Lord, help me share what needs to be shared." Because, you know, Satan comes to kill and destroy. Jesus comes that we might have life and have it more abundantly. I want everyone to have the abundant life here in America, and we can.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a great book. It sits high on my shelf. I just love it. Floyd, thanks so much for taking time with us. Chatting with you is just a blessing. I am so in alignment with so much of what you said. You're just a really concise and clear thinker and writer. I just really appreciate your presence. You're a great American. And, you know, God bless you and your new grandchild and your family, and have fun on the 4th as we celebrate our great nation. I just really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on Base Camp for me today.
And Tony, thank you for what you're doing and what your wife is doing to be active in your communities to change things. God bless you for doing that. I really, really am grateful.
Thank you, Floyd. Appreciate it. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. What a great American Floyd Brown is. It's not an exaggeration to say he's a national treasure. And his book is as good as I'm raving about. The name is Counterpunch, An Unlikely Alliance of Americans Fighting Back for Faith and Freedom. Go get yourself a copy, Base Camper. Thank you so much, and we'll see you around the fire next week.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Base Camp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Base Camp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.